Welcome to today's podcast. Our guest is Rich Miller, CPA and president of the Harrison Group. Today's topic is helpful information for open enrollment. So, Rich, welcome back to another podcast with us, and I look forward to some more helpful information.
Thank you, Shelley. It's great to be here.
Thank you. I'm going to jump in with our first question, as we have quite a few that come up during open enrollment. Can a business owner participate in a health reimbursement arrangement?
Yes, it depends on what type of business they own. First, C-Corporation owners, all owners can participate in a health reimbursement arrangement. 2% or less S-Corporation owners can also participate in a health reimbursement arrangement. However, more than 2% owners of an S-Corporation can't participate, and in addition, their family members can't participate. And family members are kind of defined as their children, their grandchildren, and their parents and grandparents. In addition, partners in a partnership are not considered to be employees, so they can't participate. Sole proprietors can't participate, and LLC owners can't participate. Of course, those entities can have a health reimbursement arrangement. Their owners just aren't eligible.
So it sounds like the only type of owner that can participate is one that's set up in that true C corporation, where they would be considered an employee, but in just about every other way, they're not employees, so they're not eligible to participate in the health reimbursement arrangement themselves.
Sometimes you have an S-Corp where some of the employees have 1% or less, or 1.5% or less, and they would be able to participate. But if the person has more than 2% ownership, they can't.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for me. My next question is, does an employer that offers a health reimbursement arrangement need a written plan document? I know that we need one with a flexible spending account, but can you explain if you need one and why you need one with an HRA?
So what happens with HRAs is they're really very similar to the old medical expense reimbursement plan, because the expenses that are eligible to be reimbursed are detailed in code section 105, and that's the regulations that do it, and then section 213 has the expenses that are okay. So what happened was, originally the 105 plans didn't have to be in writing, and then in 1981 that was modified to require a separate written plan. And so HRAs in today's form have to have a written plan document in order for employees to receive benefits on a tax-free basis. We have several situations where prospective clients didn't have written plan documents, and we had to write one for them, because if they didn't, then all the benefits that would have been paid would have been taxable to employees.
So it's really important to have that HRA, and I'm assuming it's also helpful from the participant perspective, because then they know what the employer's doing, how the contributions are going to be made, and whether or not there's carryover with those HRA funds that the employer is providing on the behalf of the employees.
Absolutely.
So we talked a little bit about flexible spending accounts. I'd like to bring those up again and say, are there certain issues or concerns when we have a flexible spending account and we might be moving to a health savings account, an HSA? What kinds of things do we need to be concerned about if a group is moving from that FSA in 2018 to an HSA for 2019?
So where there's a healthcare flexible spending account, there are three different instances, and they're all treated just a little bit differently. The first thing is, and the big problem is, when can an employee participate in a health savings account? And there have been instances where the people were out doing the open enrollment meetings and this question came up and they weren't sure what the answer is. So if you're listening to this podcast, please pay attention. So what happens is, let's say that you have a plan where the healthcare flexible spending account provides for a $500 carryover, which means that anything that's not spent by the end of the plan year can carry over to the next plan year. If any person has a balance of that, really it's anything between $1 and $500 that they carry over to the next year, then they're not eligible to participate in a health savings account for the entire next year. So with that type of a plan, you really want to make sure that you have a zero balance at the end of the plan year.
Okay.
The second instance is where you have a grace period. And a grace period is usually a 2.5 month period after the end of the plan year where employees can incur and pay for or get reimbursed for eligible expenses. And in that instance, what happens is if you have a balance at the end of the plan year, then you have to wait till the first of the month after the end of the grace period in order to participate in the HSA. So to give you an example, let's say it's a calendar year plan, and so at December 31st, you have a balance of $250. You would then have 2.5 months to spend that money, and then the 1st of April, you'd be able to participate in a health savings account. And the reason for that is it's the first of the month after the end of the grace period, which would end with a 2.5 month grace period as of March 15th. So it's very, very important that in those two instances that you don't have a balance at the end of the year. If you have a plan that doesn't have a grace period and doesn't have a carryover provision, then what will happen is that whatever your balance is at the end of the year isn't going to affect your ability to participate in the health savings account. And this is the health savings account. If somebody has a balance or they have a grace period or something for the daycare flexible spending account, that has no impact on someone's ability to contribute to a health savings account.
I know those are very confusing rules. It became hard enough with the flexible spending account when we added the $500 carryover or grace period, and trying to move from flexible spending to health savings account, you clarified those rules very well. So thank you for doing that. Next, I want to talk a little bit about non-discrimination testing. We are here at the end of the year, and I bet that your firm is doing a lot of non-discrimination testing on HRAs and flexible spending accounts. So can you talk a little bit about what that entails and what are the dangers if the testing is not done? What could happen to the plan?
So let's talk first about what's got to be done, and then we'll talk about implications of not doing it or flunking the test.
Okay.
There are basically three tests for cafeteria plans that that you have to perform in order to determine whether or not the plan is in compliance. The first one is the eligibility and contributions and benefit test, which has to do with people participating and their ability to participate and that kind of thing. And in addition to that portion, there is what they call a 25% concentration test, and that's has to do with key employees making sure that they don't contribute more than 25% of the total pre-tax contributions during the year. And if they do, you would flunk the test and you'd have to work some things around to make sure that they passed. Then the second type of test are the Section 105 non-discrimination tests, which really have to do with the healthcare flexible spending account. And in that, you have to make sure that the employees all have the same eligibility requirements and that the benefits don't discriminate in favor of highly compensated individuals. And then the last one is the dependent care assistance tests. And one of the tests that's involved there is the 55% average benefit test, which basically says that the average of the non-highly compensated employees must be at least 55% of the average of the highly compensated employees. And whether you have a client that is small or large, that's a test that sometimes is very difficult to pass. And what you want to do is you want to make sure that you run that test prior to the end of the year, because if you flunk that test, then what happens is any of the highly compensated employees that participate in the daycare flexible spending account all have to report that those amounts as income.
Wow.
And that can be disastrous. We had a client where they had 300 some highly compensated employees that had to file amended returns because they didn't do the testing until June, and they also had to file amended payroll tax returns. And that was one where we were brought in because nobody had performed the testing until well after the end of the year.
So it's definitely important to do this testing. And as we talked about, now is the time of year when a lot of that testing happens. So what if I do that testing for my employer group and find out that we're failing one of those tests? Can we fix it before we get to the end of the year, or what do we have to do?
Yes, you can fix it prior to the end of the year, but if you wait till after the end of the year, there's no way to fix it.
Well, that makes it pretty clear. So it's very important to do that non-discrimination testing before we get to the end of the calendar year, correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay. We talked a lot about health reimbursement arrangements, and I know that this question comes up very often. Can I vary the contributions that I make to HRA? And if I'm allowed to vary those contributions, how could I set that up?
So with an HRA, you could vary the contributions or the amount that's going to be reimbursed by, let's say, single or family or employee and spouse or employee and children, but you can't vary it certainly by asset class, I'm sorry, not asset class, but a class of employee. Because that would be discriminatory. And the Section 105 test that HRAs have to comply with basically have two tests, an eligibility test and a benefits test. And the eligibility for all employees must be the same, and the benefits must all be the same, unless you're talking about, as I said before, the single or the family or employee and spouse, et cetera. And so it's very, very important to do that. And just as an aside, your self-funded medical plans have the same 105 testing that's supposed to be done on an annual basis. So if you don't do that, you might want to be talking with your client to see what you need to do in order to make sure that that testing gets done. And once again, if it's not done during the plan year, there's no way to remedy it.
Well, thank you for that explanation about health reimbursement arrangements. Now, what about contributions to flex or to health savings accounts for employees? Can I do those by single and family, or can I vary those contributions at all?
So if the contributions are made outside of a cafeteria plan, there's what they call the comparability rules, which basically says what you give to one, you give to all, as long as they're in the same class, meaning single coverage, family coverage, and that type of thing. But you can't, like, give one amount to officers and another amount to rank and file. Now, I guess what you could do is you could give more to the lower paid and less to the higher paid. But what happens is sometimes the 25% of employees that you want to make sure that those people don't get more than the lower paid, that could be a moving target. And if you miss one employee, then you're going to flunk your testing. Now, the other way to do that is that you could have the contributions made through a cafeteria plan, which basically says that employees are entitled to certain amounts But you have to give them a cash option to be considered to be within a cafeteria plan. So to give you an example, what happens is you give officers all $1,000 and everybody else $500. But then what you have to do is you have to make sure that you don't flunk your 25% concentration test by contributing that amount with the HSAs. And the other portion of that is that you want to make sure that that you include a cash option for all employees, meaning we'll give you $1,000 into your HSA, or you can take it in cash.
Wow. So, needless to say, the end of the year is a very active time for you and your organization because you're not only doing all of this testing for the current year plans, you're setting up plans in the next year. So, there's an awful lot going on at the Harrison Group right now.
Absolutely. It's that time of year.
Well, Rich, I want to thank you very much for participating in our podcast. Thank you for listening. I'd like to make the following disclaimer before we end. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or a tax professional. So thank you once again, Rich. We hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, please contact your account manager or salesperson.